She, 82, the custodians, admired the outstanding color of the flowers surrounding the hotel. D, well, you have checked in now at the hotel. And I want you to move ahead to the night you are going to the ristorante you wanted to eat at. Is that in the same hotel or a different hotel? C, a different hotel. D, is it very far away? C, maybe a couple of miles. 2 or 3 miles. I've never been there to eat before. I've just passed by it. It's right on the water, where my hotel is up the hill a little. And I really wanted to experience sitting in the hotel with the windows all open, and hearing the water crashing on the beach. I've wanted to go there for a long time, but it just never happened. D, well, are you driving there now? Yes, what time of the day is it? C, it's just about dusk. I don't know what time it is by the clock, but it's kind of like twilight. D, and you think it'll be dark pretty soon? C, probably. I don't think much about it. D, well, you're approaching where the hotel is. Tell me what you're doing. C, I'm driving on South Kihei, Phonetic, Road. And it's getting darker. It's hard to see because there are no street lights. And I'm going past the Astland. That's a really big place, and I miss that driveway. It's a circle. There are a lot of trees. And the driveway seems like, well, not camouflaged, but I miss it. Aggravated, I just can't see it. So I go on down further, to find a place to turn around and go back, because I really want to eat dinner at that hotel. During this part she seemed at times to be talking to herself as she drove, and then also answering my questions. I'm driving, and I find this place. Okay. So, I see this place. It's a cul-de-sac. Yeah, this looks like a good place to turn around. I've never seen this, things are not always what they appear to be. 83. Place before. Confused. It has beautiful palm trees and flowers. And it has a fence, but it's one that I can see through. And there are all kinds of, had difficulty describing, modular homes, or homes like, very fancy mobile homes. Yeah, okay, this is a beautiful place. D, and do you find a place to turn around there? C, yeah. It's like a cul-de-sac, and I'm turning my car softly, and I see these bright lights. Pause, then confusion, it's like blinding lights. D, where are they? C, her breathing became faster, they're coming down from the sky, and it's kind of like a funnel of light. A funnel, with the wide end down toward me. It's like a confused D, with the point pointing upward. C, yes. It's almost like, from the sun, how you see through the trees this bright, bright light. And I feel a lot of very powerful energy from this light. Deep breaths D, is it a solid light? C, it's like beaming light, streams of light. D, out of the bottom? C, it was evident from her voice and her breathing that she was experiencing something unusual and mildly disturbing. By the bottom, yeah. D, are you still driving your car? C, no. I just am. D, what do you mean? C, with disbelief, it feels like I'm part of this light. D, are you still in your car? C, no. I feel like I'm floating. And like I'm part of the light. Deep breaths, I'm just light. It seems like a transcendence of time and light. Like I'm moving. I'm going somewhere. But I don't know where I'm going. And it's okay. D, it's a feeling of movement? C, yeah. Of floating. Of moving. She was definitely caught up in the experience, through colors, through time. 84. The custodians, through space, through deep breaths. It's very pleasant. As through time and space. D, but colors are all I can see? C, sluggishly, colors, and golden light. And it's very peaceful. She let her breath out in a very relaxed manner. She continued to breathe deeply and comfortably. The feeling is that I'm everything, and everything is me. All that is there. All that is here. All that is I am going to stop the transcription of this session at this point, because it soon began to involve complicated concepts. The entire session will be reported in my book Convoluted Universe, in which I will expand into theories and concepts this book will only touch on. It will be the sequel that will broaden into mind-boggling ideas. It is sufficient to say that Clara was not transported to a craft, but to a planet in another dimension. I only include this case here to show how even surroundings can appear as an illusion. At the end of the session, I was communicating with her subconscious. D, are you in a position to explain what happened when she was driving down the road in Hawaii, and came upon that housing park? C, she was sent there at that time and that place, because that was the place that materialized for her benefit. Afterwards, it was not appropriate at the time that she returned to that particular place. So she was taken to a place she knew on that highway, so that the car would be there, and she would know how to get to where she was going. D, then the return had to occur at a certain place in Hawaii at that time? C, not necessarily. That was just a place that she felt comfortable with in the physical body. And the place, the housing development, that was created for her to be, was a place of great beauty for her. And so it was a place where things are not always what they appear to be. 85, D, C, D, C, D, C, D, C, D, C, D. She could be totally and completely relaxed, so the transference could be accomplished. Then her physical body was returned to the car, and the car was physically taken to the other highway. That is correct. It was just simply dematerialized and then materialized back at another place. Is this common to move cars and people from one place to another? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It happens often then? Very often, very often. When it happens, is the physical body dematerialized and rematerialized also? Yes, and no harm occurs to the body? No harm. It becomes pure energy. And she and the vehicle were just moved from one place to another. That is correct. So when she came to, I guess I should say, when she was once again conscious, she was in a different place on the island. C, right. D, and was driving at that time. Yes, and she had no memory until now of what happened. C, that's right. D, is this the only time this has occurred in her life as Clara? C, it has occurred many times. But this time she was at a place and time in her life when she was open to investigate, to see what occurred, and how it may have occurred. The other times were not a time when she was ready to have an understanding. Or she was not at a growth time in her earthly physical life, that she could have an understanding of what was happening. D, so this was a time when something unusual occurred, and made her remember it. C, that is correct. D, is it all right for her to know the information now? 86, the custodians, C, yes. She should know the information. She has been longing to know the information. She will understand it now. D, and it can be a benefit, because we want no harm at all. C, yes. It is to be a joyous benefit for her. I then asked the subconscious to recede, and I had Clara's personality incorporate fully back into her body. The release or change is always noticeable, because the subject breathes deeply at this point. I oriented her to the present time, and brought her back to full consciousness. Oh, things are not always what they appear to be. Can we ever be sure that what we see and experience is real? At least it appears to be done in a subtle and gentle manner, so the only effect will be curiosity, and then, usually, dismissal of the incident as an oddity. It would do no good to fear something so benign, especially if there is no way of anticipating such an event, and certainly no way of controlling it. S. The mystery continues, and continues to deepen. Chapter 4, Hidden Information in Dreams. When is a dream not a dream? When is it an actual memory clouded over by the subconscious so it will appear as a dream? What is a dream anyway? How can we ever know the difference? And finally, is it important to our well-being to know the difference anyway? Maybe such things are better left alone. In my work, many people do not report any actual physical contacts with aliens or sightings of craft. Instead, they're often bothered by strange and unusually vivid dreams. These are usually dreams that had a different quality about them, and dreams they cannot forget. We all, from time to time, have remarkably sharp and clear dreams that seem very real. And we are usually glad they are not real. We also have dreams that we remember long after they have occurred. This is a normal part of our shadow world we call sleep, and it is often our subconscious method of interpreting events in our waking life. It is also a way that the subconscious is attempting to deliver information to us via symbols. What makes dreams about UFOs, aliens or space flights different? And why should we even pay 87, 88, hidden information in dreams, any attention to them? I have always said, if it's not broke, don't fix it. If the person is functioning normally, and not having any memories that are creating problems, it is better to leave it alone and treat it as merely an interesting curiosity. There is no need to make life more complicated merely for the sake of curiosity. Remember, once you open that box, you cannot close it again. You cannot forget what you bring forth as a memory, and it may affect your life forever after. I always wish for my subjects to be affected in a positive way by any information uncovered through hypnotic therapy. Thus, if any information is uncovered through exploring the subject's dreams, it must be incorporated into their life in a positive manner, so they can deal with it and return to living a normal life. This same rule applies to people who have conscious memories of interaction with aliens. This life is the most important of all, and they must continue to live it as normally as possible. So it is the therapist's responsibility to help them deal with anything that is uncovered, and put it into perspective. In my book Between Death and Life, we found that the soul, or spirit, actually never sleeps. Only the body gets tired, and the soul would get very bored waiting around for the body to awaken. So while the body sleeps, our soul or spirit, the real part of us, is having many adventures. It may travel to the spirit realm to meet with the master teachers and guides, to obtain advice or to learn more lessons. It also may travel to other parts of our world, or even venture outward to other worlds and dimensions. These travels are sometimes remembered in snatches, especially in the common dream of flying. That essential part of us always returns to the body when it is time to wake up, because it is connected by the silver cord. This umbilical is not severed until the physical death of the body frees the spirit. Before I began UFO investigation, I never thought of the physical body actually going somewhere during the sleep state. After all, the body would awaken if it were moved, wouldn't it? This has been part of my education to investigate these other strange possibilities. In these cases, I have tried to carefully question to be sure the experience was an actual physical, the custodian's, 89, experience, and not an out-of-the-body spiritual experience. They can be similar, but the description is different. In an ABI, the person may remember the sensation of leaving their body. Often they can look down and see their sleeping body lying on the bed. They describe their re-entry into the empty shell after their journey. They often describe seeing the silver cord, the umbilical that connects the spirit to the body. Sometimes they describe a tugging sensation of the cord pulling them back if they have been away too long. In my work, I discovered it is possible for the body to exist without the spirit residing constantly within it. It is maintained by a life force present in the physical, but it cannot continue to exist indefinitely without the presence of the soul. The other experience, of the actual physical body traveling, is described differently. My first case of this type was a wonderful black man, John Johnson, a psychologist who often traveled with me to interview suspected abduction cases. In those early days of my investigation, everything was new. I felt we were plowing new ground. I had not yet discovered the patterns that I now observe. This only comes from investigating many cases. Since I am not a psychologist, I relied on John's expertise when we conducted a first-time interview with people who thought they were having alien-type experiences. He asked questions I would have never thought of, questions that told him about the mental health of the subject and their family. Sometimes when we got in the car to go home, he told me the subject was disturbed and he suspected child abuse in their past. In other cases, he suspected the person was fantasizing or looking for attention. I gained invaluable lessons as I learned from him some of the signs to look for. Mostly he would say the family was normal and appeared to definitely have had an experience they believed was real. If he thought it was worth following up, we arranged to return, and either he or I performed the hypnosis. I greatly valued John's help and advice during the 3 years we worked on these cases. He traveled many miles with me to investigate these unusual topics, in spite of his weak heart that caused him much pain. It often seemed as though he was taking heart medication like candy, but, 90, hidden information in dreams, he said working with me was what kept him going. Our working relationship only ceased when John died of heart failure in 1990 at the age of 53. Shortly after I met John in 1987, he told me about his own strange experience, which he wanted to explore under hypnosis. It had occurred in 1981 while he was traveling on a tour in Egypt. He was rooming with a stranger, arranged by the tour, in a hotel in Cairo. He could remember nothing about the night except that he awoke standing over the other man's bed, which naturally startled the man awake. He could not remember getting up or how he got there. All he remembered was something about a blue light. I suggested that he may have been sleepwalking. It is very common to do that if you are trying to sleep in a strange place, especially if you are tired from a journey. He had thought about that explanation, but discarded it, because he had no history of sleepwalking. He was positive he had gone somewhere, and he wanted me to help him uncover where. Before we began the session, he confided that he was worried that his heart might give him problems while he was in a trance. He listed symptoms to watch for, and to bring him out if they occurred. I told him I was convinced that nothing of that nature would occur, and I was correct. He went through the session beautifully. Since I knew he was a hypnotist, I was positive it would not be difficult to put him under. Because he knew the procedures, he gave me his full cooperation. Once he was in trance, I took him back to the day he arrived in Egypt. He had just deplaned and was preparing to go through customs. When working with cases that involve the present life, there can be apprehension involved in remembering the event. Many hypnotists say the subject will experience anxiety about returning to the time of the event. I have found no resistance when I take the subject, not to the exact time of the event, but to before the event occurred. This way you can sneak in the back door, and lead up to it from behind. After he relived being in the airport and going through customs with the tour group, I moved him ahead to his hotel. He gave exacting descriptions of the hotel and the meal he ate before retiring to his, the custodian's, 91, room. He was so tired from the long trip that he had no trouble falling asleep. As I have said before, the subconscious never sleeps. It is always aware of what is happening. I knew if anything had occurred during the night, the subconscious would tell me about it. If it was only a dream or sleepwalking, the subconscious would also tell me that. D. Did anything unusual happen during the night? John's answer was a surprise to me. I was called out. D. Can you explain what you mean? J. I was called out, and I exited through the roof, through the ceiling of the room. At the time, I assumed he was describing an Ibi. Do you often do that? J. I have on occasion done that. D. You say some Ion called you. Do you know who it was? J. No. I don't recognize that voice. I've never heard that voice. I asked him to describe what was happening. J. I just float up. And I float through objects, through solids. I've done it before. John then found himself in a dimly lit circular room. He was standing before a huge glowing white tablet. The estimated size was 15 feet tall by 8 feet wide. He sensed he was not alone in the room, but his attention was focused on the large stone. I'm studying the block. There are lessons incorporated in the block. D. Have you seen that block before? J. That particular block, no. But I have seen other objects. Not crystal in form, but I have seen other objects with, 92, hidden information in dreams, writing on them. D. As you study it, can you share with me what it says? J. No. I have no recall of what it is. As soon as I read it, I forget it. D. but it's important to read it, and then on other part of you remembers? Yes, is that why you were called there, to read this? Jay, I assume that was a part of my reason for being here. Another reason is to learn. I kept trying to get him to share some of the writing with me, but to no avail. Jay, I do not recall. I learn it, and in a millisecond I have forgotten it. It becomes a part of me. In one instance he was standing before the stone studying it, and the next instance he was back in his room at the hotel. I'm back in my room. I'm not in my bed. My bed is over there. I'm over another bed. I was still assuming he had Nibi experience. Then did you just stand up whenever you came back into the body, or what? Jay, I did not come back into the body. The body was with me. This surprised me, and took me off guard, since it was the first time I had heard of this. You mean your physical body went through the ceiling? Isn't that a little unusual? Jay, matter of fact, no. I go through the walls sometimes. D, I mean, if someone were to look at the bed that night, would your physical body have been lying there? No, do you know how that was possible to do that? J, teleportation. D, did you do it on your own? J, no, I cannot do it with my own will. When I was called, the custodians, 93, out it was made possible. This rather shook me up. I was having difficulty thinking of sensible questions. D, this round circular room that you found yourself in, was that a physical solid room? I was thinking it may have been on the spiritual plane, perhaps at the schools or the hall of learning, described in Between Death and Life. J, yes, it is solid. D, your body was solid? And the floors, the walls and everything in that room were solid? J, yes, they are all solid. D, do you know where that room was located? J, no. But I can tell you what I see in the room. He was again visualizing it, as I face the tablet there are panels to the right, and a railing. The panels are elevated maybe 24 inches from the main surface of the floor, and there is a walkway there. There are panels and gauges. I don't understand any of them. I'm not shown them. I just see that as I scan the room. D, is there anything you can compare them to? J, I can't tell. I am seeing the dials and gauges from a distance. D, is the railing around the side of the room? J, yes, it surrounds the room. This part I am in is like a sunken room. It is lower than the rest of the room. I feel a presence, but I am unable to look in that direction. There is little illumination in the room. The major source of illumination seems to be this crystal tablet. I see some purple, pointing, right over there, but I don't know what it is. D, have you been to this place before? J, I have been many places. I don't know that I have been to, 94, hidden information in dreams, this particular room before. It is new to me. I don't know my way around. I am not familiar with this room. I have been to many rooms. Maybe just one time in that room was enough. I have been in many chambers only one time. D, what about the place where the room is located? Have you been there before? J, I don't know. I only see the room. I'm not anywhere else. When I came here, I came to the room. When I leave from the room. I don't go anywhere else. D, how long have you been going to these different places? J, all of my life. D, but you say th were not the same. How were they different? J, sometimes I'm in an auditorium. Sometimes I'm in a smaller room. Sometimes I'm in a library. Sometimes I just have a sense of motion. It can be a floating sensation, or an accelerating velocity as I saw. In the past when I did that, it would be because I had nothing else to do during that particular period. I had nothing to learn. I had no work to do, so I was on my own. The feeling of freedom can be exhilarating. Sometimes on these little journeys I see beings. They look like human beings. They are dead though, but they were human beings. They are dead only in the sense that they are not of this world any longer. These places sounded more like the spiritual realm where the soul journeys at night, and in between lives, to study and learn. D, during all of those times, was it your physical body that experienced this? J, sometimes it was my physical body. Sometimes it was my astral body. It is difficult to say when these experiences were physical, because there is no way to validate that information. This experience in Egypt definitely involved my physical body. D. I suppose it's very similar, because in both cases the main Meadows, the custodians, 95, part of fear, intelligence is present. Yes, when you had this experience of going through the walls and the ceiling in your physical body, what did that feel like? J. A sensation only of motion, just motion. I don't recall it. I'm just there. I don't know what I did. D. But when you came back and you found yourself by the roommate's bed, did you see anything unusual in the room? J. I saw a blue beam coming from the ceiling. D. Bright blue? J. No, no. Pale blue. It's a little darker than a robin's egg. D. What do you think the light was? J. What do I think it was? It was a slide. It wasn't really a slide, but I see a slide as though it was made available for me to come back into the room. I can see it now. It comes from the ceiling to the floor, and is about 3 feet in width. It brought me back into the room. It has something to do with the breaking down of molecules of the body. I can think of no other way to accomplish that feat. D. Where do you think the light came from? J. I have no idea. But I was in it when I went out, and when I came back. It gives one a sense of nurturing. It's a good light. D. How long did it last in the room? J. Just long enough for me to see it, and then it was gone. And I found myself back in the room standing by the other bed, as though I had been deposited there. It startled my roommate awake, but I had no memory of how I got there. Since it seemed we could obtain no further information about the experience, I instructed him to leave the scene he was watching. I brought him up to the present time, 1988. Before the session, John had asked me to find out about his health problems. In other sessions, I have asked the subconscious to tell me what was wrong with the body, and prescribe remedies. It has always done so, in an unemotional and detached manner, as though speaking about a third person. This brief portion shows how truly objective the subconscious can be. 96. Hidden information in dreams. D. I was speaking to John's subconscious. He is concerned about problems he is having with his physical body. Would you be able to scan his body and tell us about some of these problems? J. I am not deep enough to conduct that scan. That scan requires a depth that will enable one to circulate throughout all of the organs in the body. I have not achieved that depth. I have incomplete conditioning for me to achieve that depth. D. Would the subconscious be able to look at the body objectively and give us some information anyway? It doesn't have to be thorough. We would appreciate anything you can tell us. J. Yes. Pause. Presently. That heart is dying. It shall stop one day. Soon. His total unemotional objectivity surprised me. Is that the most important problem of the body? J. Yes. It keeps the body functioning. D. Is there anything that John can do to help the condition? Do you have any suggestions? J. Emphatic, no. When his time comes, he goes. D. There's nothing he can do to help it? J. No, no. There is nothing he wants to do. He is satisfied. He has come to terms with it. I gave suggestions for well-being and health, but I knew these would be futile. If the subconscious was positive there was no hope of recovery, then there would be nothing to be done by mortals. When John awakened he remembered nothing of what his subconscious had said. This is often the case. The subject may remember some of the session, but the part when I converse with their subconscious is blank. I thought it best to let John hear it from himself when he played the tape recording. Instead he wanted to describe what he remembered about the room. Most of it was the same as the session. I couldn't see the custodians, 97, the dials and gauges and stuff clearly, because I was maybe 20 feet away. It was a large room, and it was tall. You know, this sounds crazy, but at one point I wondered if I was inside the earth. Seriously. One thing that made me think that was because the walls were craggy, like rock. As a matter of fact, it was more like a cave. The floor even seemed to be rock. A week later, John called to discuss the session after he had a chance to listen to the tape. The first thing he did was announce that there was no way he could believe his physical body was taken from that room.